From the KTOO newsroom, I'm Claire Strimple with a quick look at the news. A private plane was forced to make an emergency landing on a Bethel road Sunday afternoon when it ran out of fuel. No one was hurt. KYUK's Will McCarthy reports.
Tyler Bartlett and his co-pilot were just 3 miles away from the Bethel airport when he felt the Cessna 172 begin to sputter. He was coming from McGrath in a private plane to accrue hours for his commercial license, and he estimated the flight would take about 2 hours. Bartlett loaded up with 3.5 hours worth of fuel for the flight. But as he approached Bethel, he was running on empty. Here's Bartlett.
Lost a lot of the power, had a little bit, but yeah, that wasn't really helping keep us up, so we're slowly going down. First thing to do, find a place to land.
Bartlett quickly realized he wasn't going to make it to the airport, and he told air traffic control that he had to make an emergency landing. At first, he aimed for the road leading out to the dump, but a quick burst of power gave him hope he might be able to make it to the runway after all. A few seconds later, it became clear he didn't have enough, and he chose Ridgecrest Drive instead.
And I was able to, avoid the traffic, saw a car pass, and I saw it was clear ahead. It's like, all right, try to put it between these tire lines, land over right at touchdown, basically right in front of Phillies.
Bartlett was able to avoid any power lines on the way down, and the slow Sunday traffic meant that there were few cars on the road. Bartlett, who's 20 years old, grew up in Anchorage and has been living in Bethel for about a year and a half. His dad is also a Bush pilot, and his mother is the office manager for Fox Air, a local airline charter service. Bartlett does not work for Fox Air. He got his private license in spring 2020, and he said he's never had to make an emergency landing before. Still, Bartlett said he didn't panic.
Just a bit of a shock to lose power, but, I knew I had the road to land on.
His mother, Jonna Bartlett, trusts her son's abilities and is glad he's safe. Here's Jonna.
Definitely one of those things moms don't want to hear about, but at least he's safe. Missed the signs, missed any cars. I'm just like, crazy, crazy day.
Police arrived to help manage traffic. Bartlett and his dad towed the plane to the airport with a motorcade of police and state vehicles. No tickets or citations were issued for the emergency landing. In Bethel, I'm Will McCarthy.
Earlier this month, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released its first ever strategic plan for mariculture in the state. As KMXT's Kristen DeBroth reports, it's an attempt to get the science up to speed with a burgeoning industry.
NOAA's Aquaculture Strategic Science Plan encompasses 5 years' worth of goals and priorities for Alaskan kelp and oyster farms and other niche forms of mariculture, like the cultivation of sea cucumbers and abalone. It identifies areas where it expects the industry to grow and where the agency needs to expand its own research. It also identifies partnership opportunities with other organizations. Jordan Hollersmith is the mariculture and macroalgae lead research biologist for the Alaska Fisheries Science Center. She helped author the report. She says it's kind of like a research blueprint for the road ahead.
This document was sort of our guiding document of how do we see NOAA's role in mariculture research in Alaska.
That could be a major question for the state in the years to come. Governor Mike Dunleavy has said he wants to make Alaska the mariculture capital of the world, and he put together a mariculture task force to develop a 5-year plan detailing how to turn Alaskan aquaculture into a $100 million industry. According to NOAA, less than 100 kelp farms are currently in operation in the state, mostly in southeast Alaska and in the waters off Kodiak Island. Those farms are valued at less than $2 million. Other areas of the country, like parts of coastal New England, have also experienced a mariculture boom. But there isn't a lot of research on kelp farming that's specific to Alaska. Hollersmith says one area that NOAA is interested in as the industry continues to grow is how kelp farms might affect fish habitat.
We really want to know, how do those species respond to these farms? Some may be helped by the presence of the farms. It might create habitat. It might create food sources. Some might be deterred from the presence of these farms.
Similarly, as mariculture expands in Alaska and ocean conditions change, Hollersmith says future NOAA research could help create a kind of bumper crop for coastal communities.
We can pick where we're growing, where we're setting these farms, and try and target areas where it seems like they might be experiencing more stable conditions. We can also target the species that are farmed.
Hollersmith says there's a lot to learn, but the fact that NOAA is asking those questions indicates an enthusiasm for mariculture and exciting future for the industry in Alaska. NOAA's Aquaculture Strategic Science Plan is published on the agency's website. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
A Fairbanks group is continuing to fight potential development of large gold mines in the area. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, Save Our Domes has broadened its perspective to include new prospects north of Fairbanks.
Save Our Domes, originally Save the Domes, formed last year in response to a project on Esther Dome, where public opposition resulted in leases being withdrawn and exploration paused. Save Our Domes held a public meeting Tuesday, and the group's Anna Gadoon said they're rebooting as gold exploration work targets additional areas north of Fairbanks where people live and recreate.
We don't figure that any of these neighborhoods really stand a chance on our own. But from Esther to Amanita in the hills, that's probably like 10,000 people. And maybe a third of them are like, go mining. But the rest of us are like, no.
If there's enough of us that do not want these mines, we can't be a silent majority.
Save Our Domes organizer and geologist Sarah Henschen outlined the exploration areas with gold deposits that could also lead to large open pit and or underground mines. Henschen says they include Treasure Creek east of Old Murphy Dome Road, Golden Summit around Cleary Summit, Amanita off Chena Hot Springs Road, and others northeast of Fairbanks.
There's a huge boom in exploration.
Henschen explained the multi-step process to develop a new mine from definition of a deposit to feasibility studies and permit applications.
The permitting stage can take quite a long time, and there's still going to be, I would say, at least 2 to 3 more years of exploration before it even goes into, before they kind of make a package to sell to a production company. So we have a little bit of time, which is nice. You know, no one needs to panic.
Henschen said the process can be elongated further if the price of gold dips and a project gets shelved until gold rebounds. Demand for gold used in technology like computer chips is often highlighted to justify mining, but Henschen says only 8% of gold produced around the world is used by industry, and the rest goes to jewelry, personal investment, and central banks.
Why do we need to extract new material from the ground to support industry uses when we have literal tons and tons and tons of perfectly usable material sitting in vaults?
Save Our Domes is trying to recruit a resident from each of the 4 Fairbanks areas where new mines could be developed to serve on the group's board of directors. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Governor Mike Dunleavy is championing Alaska as the most responsible place to develop critical minerals and rare earth elements for renewable energy and other technology. The governor pushed the message Tuesday during an address at Pro Mining Critical Minerals Summit at the University of Alaska, Fairbanks.
If you care about the environment, we need to produce resources in Alaska. If you care about social justice, we need to produce resources here in Alaska. If you care about enriching people and not dictators, we need to produce resources here in Alaska.
Governor Dunleavy touted Alaska as a place with environmental, social, and governance, or ESG standards.
There's a lot of talk about ESG nowadays, but Alaska has been doing ESG before ESG was a thing.
Dunleavy welcomed President Biden, invoking the Defense Production Act to increase U.S. output of critical minerals, including lithium, cobalt, manganese, graphite, and nickel, but criticized the administration for halting Alaska's Ambler Industrial Access Road to critical mineral prospects. The state reported 87 cases of COVID-19 in Juneau from the last week among residents and visitors to town. It's almost the same number as the previous week. The count doesn't include positive results from home tests. There were more than 2,400 cases reported across the state. That includes more than 750 non-resident cases. Almost a third of those were identified on vessels at sea related to tourism. 8 new deaths were reported this week, including residents from Anchorage, Fairbanks, Ketchikan, and Wasilla. They are from as far back as April of this year. Statewide, 78 people with COVID-19 are in the hospital, and 11 are on ventilators. COVID-19 vaccinations are available for anyone 6 months old or older. In Juneau, call 907-586-6000 or go to juneau.org/vaccine to make an appointment. It's sunny and nearly 70 in Juneau today, but that's not going to last. There's a chance of rain tonight, and rain is likely Thursday and Friday. Rain also predicted through the weekend and into early next week. You're listening to KTOO.